Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay and had a good weekend. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast on Monday, March the 2nd. Coming up, traders in Sheerness say they're fighting a losing battle to keep their shopping promenade alive. We speak to the Kent footballer on training and playing during Ramadan. Plus, we have reaction to Gillingham's last gasp victory at the weekend. But first, the Foreign Secretary says they're working to bring home tens of thousands of British nationals stranded in the United Arab Emirates following a weekend of airstrikes. Dubai and Abu Dhabi have been targeted in revenge for the US and Israel carrying out an attack on Iran over the weekend, which killed its supreme leader. President Trump has said US action will continue until objectives have been met, including restricting Iran's nuclear program. Meantime, families are being moved off an RAF base in Cyprus after its runway was hit in a suspected drone strike. Well, I've been speaking to Dr. Yaniv Voller, who's a senior lecturer in Middle East politics at the University of Kent. And I started by asking why the UAE has been caught up in the dispute.
The UAE has become a hub of investment banking and high tech, and it's attracted immigrants from all over the world, very high-level immigrants from all over the world. And it's been considered traditionally a safe haven in an otherwise chaotic region. The reason Iran has targeted its neighbors is that, first of all, these neighbors, particularly the UAE, but also Saudi Arabia, of course, and to some extent Qatar and definitely Bahrain, are considered to be U.S. allies. The U.S. has military bases, air force bases, naval bases in these countries, and these have been some of the targets, according to reports. It's also served Iran in threatening these, in punishing these neighbors for being allies with the U.S. Even though, again, to the best of our knowledge, these neighbors have not taken any part in the attack. In fact, in public, at least, they've condemned the attack and tried to prevent it. But as far as the regime in Iran is concerned, because these governments or these countries are close allies with the U.S., it's a way to put more pressure on the U.S. It's a way to punish them for being U.S. allies, perhaps a way to exert more pressure on the U.S. to contain the attack. And another reason is that Iran is trying to disrupt oil supplies, international oil supplies, and these countries are very important suppliers of oil and natural gas. So targeting critical infrastructure in these countries could actually cause pressures on the international energy market.
And just explain to us Britain's involvement in all of this. We heard quite a lengthy statement from the Prime Minister over the weekend. Where do we stand? Because obviously there are an awful lot of British people in these countries that are being targeted at the moment, and we are famously an ally of America. So what's our role?
Prime Minister Starmer emphasised during the weekend that Britain will not take an active part in the attack. Starmer and other European leaders have raised questions about the timing of the attack, or perhaps the legitimacy, given that it was not done in consultation with the UN Security Council. On the other hand, the Prime Minister also clarified that Britain will allow the US to use its air force bases in nearby countries, which means that the UK is involved in the conflict to a degree. Even if the Prime Minister is cautious about highlighting Britain's role in the events, I suspect there's no established evidence for that. But I would assume that Britain would support the US in any way that it can in terms of intelligence provision and assistance on the ground. I also suppose that now the other priority for the UK government is to allow and support any British citizens in the Gulf states to return to Britain. But for the time being, Britain's involvement in the conflict is limited to these points.
We've also heard about an airbase in Cyprus being targeted. That was a UK airbase, I understand. So obviously that draws us in a little bit more, I suppose, doesn't it?
Exactly. And I think this is one of the reasons why what the Prime Minister has been cautious about Britain's role in the conflict. One reason was to protect British assets in the region, but also showing that Britain would get involved in any way possible for the time being.
You mentioned there about support for British people in these countries because there are an awful lot of them. No flights are leaving at the moment. It must be a very, very worrying time for people who have, moved over there, set up a life for themselves now, and those on holiday as well. I mean, there must be a huge number of Brits over in the UAE at the moment. Is there any kind of talk as to what may happen in the days and weeks ahead?
Absolutely. So first of all, the UAE government has been very conscious about its own image, right? As a very popular holiday destination, as a safe place in the Middle East, and they've reassured foreign nationals living in the country that the government will do whatever it can to enable their stay in the country, including offering assistance to hotels to accommodate those who got stuck in the country. I guess that in the coming few days, when things become a bit clearer, because for the time being, the violence has de-escalated to an extent. There's some calm in the fighting in the region. So I think it's that at some point the sky will open again, will reopen, and governments will probably send rescue flights to rescue those who got stuck in these countries. I think that for more, and this is just an estimation, but the way things appear, the residents of these countries are relatively safe. Iran has now diverted much of its efforts to target Israel. So it seems that for some time there will be an opportunity for those who wish to leave the country to actually get to board rescue flights. But for those who wish to stay, I believe that the governments in these countries also have contingency plans that will allow them to feel safe, even if violence re-escalates and these countries are targeted again. Again, these countries, even though they've tried to resolve these issues diplomatically, they've also been prepared for war. They knew that something like that might happen. Iran did target Qatar in the previous round of fighting in June. So there are contingency plans to protect the residents of these countries, citizens and foreigners alike.
We'll continue to keep you updated on this story as it develops. You can hear the very latest within bulletins over on our sister radio station, KMFM. Perhaps you have friends and family in the UAE. Well, you can get in touch with us to share their story by emailing news at thekmgroup.co.uk.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories, and a Gillingham woman is appealing for help to find a man who sexually assaulted her horse. The unidentified stranger was captured performing an alleged act on CCTV at Pheasant Stables on Lower Raynham Road last year. The animal's owner fears he could go on to attack women or children. She's put up a post on Facebook asking for information. A dad has suffered second-degree burns after a candle caused a fire at his home in Folkestone. Alec Carmichael lost most of his belongings in the blaze on Sydney Street 8 days ago. More than £2,000 has been donated to help him via an online fundraising page. A Faversham man who admitted controlling his partner's life before subjecting her to a two-hour attack has been sent to prison. The victim told a court Aaron Nugent cut her off from family and friends and punched and strangled her last November. The 45-year-old has been locked up for almost 4 years and made the subject of a 10-year restraining order. You can see his picture within the story today at Kent Online. A hearing's been told a man who died in a crash in Dartford lost control of his bike in the car park of a dental surgery. Joshie Stevens suffered fatal injuries. batteries outside Highfield Dental Centre in Summerhill Road last October. A coroner's concluded the 45-year-old's death was accidental, and it's possible the rear brake failed before the crash. A Gillingham man who shouted Islamophobic English Defence League chants at a Muslim police officer has been ordered to do unpaid work. David Atright had been drinking and was being detained over an unrelated matter last November. The 33-year-old from Goudhurst Road must also do rehab and pay £50 in compensation. Next today, and it's been revealed that a car park company has made nearly £20,000 from drivers in Kent through what's known as major keying errors. Now, it happens if you enter a digit incorrectly when putting your number plate into a payment machine at various country parks in the county. Euro car parks then issue a £20 admin fee to anyone who appeals their fine. Well, reporter Ellie Hodgson has been investigating all of this, and she's been speaking to Jeff Hannington, who was issued with a penalty after visiting Trosley Country Park.
Initially, I never saw the appeal. Then I got the final notice that I've got to pay £70, which I responded to and said, well, look, I didn't know anything. I emphatically have never seen the appeal. And I've done it. In fact, I've got an affidavit now that I've done to say that I've never seen the appeal, signed by a solicitor, I might add. In the event that if I've got to go to court, then that will be my evidence that I never received their original appeal. When they finally, then I responded to that and said I hadn't heard from the appeal. And then I didn't hear anything again. And then I subsequently got that letter saying, you've got to pay, you're out of time for the appeal. But they sent me a copy of the appeal, but never responded in particular to the letter. They just said they'd received my letter. And that's how it's progressed from there.
How does it feel when you're getting these letters through? Is it stressful?
It is very stressful. My wife she says, pay it. And it becomes a matter of principle. And if I'd have known that when they finally sent it to me and it was reduced to £20, when I originally read that, and I've got very good legal friends I know, they've read it too, it's not clear that the £20 is not in it on top of the £70. They don't say it's a reduced amount, which again, it just the way it's all worded, it leaves you. But I never had the opportunity to pay the £20 because the time for appeal had expired, and I couldn't go to these other people, isn't it? Their appeal procedure, POPAL, is it?
Yeah, Poplar, I think some people call it.
Poplar. I couldn't go to Poplar because I was out of time, and they wanted me to, you know, to pay the maximum. And I put my hand up. Okay, there was an error in the putting the number plate in, but I don't know whether that was an error with the machine or whether it was an error from us. But I think, like VAR in football, I consider it's clear and obvious that the amount of digits that are there relates it to my car.
Now, Kent County Council, which owns country parks across the county, say they're working with the company to try and address the problem.
Kent Online reports.
Work has started on rebuilding an arts and music venue in Faversham, which is gutted by fire on New Year's Eve. The blaze, which broke out in the roof of the Gatefield Hall at the Alexander Centre, is thought to have been sparked accidentally by an electrical fault. Bosses say it's currently an empty shell, but they're committed to bringing the facilities back to life. Figures show 79% of pupils in Kent have been given a place at their first choice secondary school this year. Emails are being sent out to parents today confirming where Year 6 pupils will be going in September. 96% have been offered one of their three choices. Those who took the Kent test will also find out if they've got a place at a grammar school. There's been a backlash over plans to add an extra story to a new hotel planned for Dover's Marina Curve. Approvals already been given to the project to span across four stories, but Dover Harbour Board say the extra capacity is needed so the business can break even. It's all part of the £250 million Dover Western Docks revival scheme, but those against say it'll dominate the iconic coastline. Now, traders in Sheerness High Street have told us they're fighting a losing battle to keep their shopping promenade alive following the closure of several small businesses. Black Hat Hardware closed on Valentine's Day, with the owner telling customers it was no longer feasible to keep it open due to a drop in footfall. It follows other independents who've shut in recent months. Declan Forley runs Sheerness Mobility Limited with his dad, and he's been chatting to our reporter, Joe Crosley.
Whatever you would call Neat's Court, these big out-of-town outlets, when they can get everything there, they're just not popping into town because they're already out of town. And I think the more that you take away from high streets and plop in these places, it then just kills the high street. The less and less reason they give people to come into town, the less and less people that do actually come into town.
Sure. And I mean, just looking outside your door, you can see you closed up shop.
Yeah.
As the banks have, a lot of the banks have gone as well. Why do you think Sheerness has seen these troubles in terms of closing shops and stuff like that?
I don't really know. You look at, I know Sittingbourne is doing better than us, but from what I recall, they also had a lot of funding given to them. We are a holiday town. When it is like the 6 weeks holidays and other like half term breaks, sometimes the town feels immovable and Tesco runs out of bread. But during normal operating time, shall we say, we are more quiet. I think that doesn't help, especially like smaller day-to-day shops. Places like Tesco's and, I know Aldi's moved now, but anywhere that's on the back of a bigger company, they it sort of carries each other, doesn't it? But with us being a holiday town, I think that doesn't help. And if there's only so many people here and we're quite small, and there's not really like, you get people, say, like again, in Sittingbourne, you get people that live there to go to London and stuff like that. There's not really much of a through road here. There's, if you want to, you've got to get a train to Sittingbourne and go somewhere else. No one's doing like day to day stuff like that here. We are, I think, as we know, with the shop and standing, I think there's a lot of elderly here. I think people retired here. Love, you got the lovely Lees and stuff like that, and I don't think there's, that's bad, I don't think there's as many jobs here anymore either. There's too many people for two little shops, and if no one's spending the money in the shops don't stay open, we don't get jobs, and I think it just snowballs into an effect of losing stuff over and over until it's all probably online within 5 to 10 years, in all honesty. Not that people want it to be, but I think that's what's going to happen eventually.
Kent Online reports.
A mum from Dartford says she feels insulted after getting a £17 bill from a nursery that shut 3 years ago. Kelly Casamole's daughter Holly was left without a childcare place following the closure of YMCA Oakfield Nursery in 2023. She's now received an email saying her account is in arrears. Well, bosses have since apologised and say it was an automated message. Plans to convert part of an historic pub in Sevenoaks into apartments have been thrown out. It follows more than 280 objections to the proposals for the 18th century Black Horse in Stansted. The owners also wanted to use part of the site as a micro pub. The council unanimously rejected the scheme. Next today, and a Kent footballer's been telling us what it's like to train and play during Ramadan. Throughout the holy month, many Muslims choose not to eat or drink during daylight hours. Well, I've been chatting to Mohamedou Fall, who plays for Maidstone United, and started by asking how he copes with his training regime.
For me, it is quite difficult, yeah. The routine is, wow. Starting from the morning, waking up at 5 a.m. in the morning to pray, and even just before praying to get my last bits of food in, last bits of drink, whatever that may be. For me, it could be porridge, it could be dates, anything that's going to give me energy to try and last the day. If it's a training day, then I will be going back to sleep for an hour max, and then I'll be up again for a shower, and then I'll be making my way to training. That'd probably take me an hour or two, depending where I'm coming from. And then obviously from training, which is around 9:30 to like 12, obviously do my training. I don't really feel the Ramadan then. the Ramadan or the not eating hits you afterwards, after you finish training, you know, where you want to top up on your water, top up on your food. Obviously you can't have that. So you know, you feel quite lethargic, very tired. And then for me, in my case, it's an hour and a half drive back home, which is quite tiring when you're just staring down the motorway. But you know, after I get home, you know, I say hello to my wife, my kids, got to give them energy as well. And then after that, I think around 5:30, it's getting a bit later now as the days go on. Today was at 5:40. So we'd break fast around that time and then we'd pray. And then after that, which is the last prayer, because we'd have five prayers in a day. The fifth prayer, we'd probably go to the mosque, or we can pray at home, it depends. And then after that, we're just free for the night, I guess, to eat, chill, relax, do what we want, engage in worship if we want to. And then for me, if I've got training the next day, then that would require me going to bed at maybe 12 and then waking up at 5 again, and then the whole process repeats. But if it's a match day, then I am afforded a little bit of a line when I do wake up in the morning. So yeah, that's pretty much the schedule.
How important is it for you to observe Ramadan? It's obviously an incredibly important time, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. For me personally, I look forward to it. It's a chance to reconnect with God, reconnect with oneself as well. You know, I think throughout the year, you know, there's just so many things that happen in life and to yourself that, you know, when this time of Ramadan comes, I think it just slows down life for you a little bit. It simplifies it. You know, for example, you know, you just want to make sure that you've done your prayers. You want to make sure that, for example, character stuff, you know, that you're being good to people, you're more aware of what you're saying to people, how you're coming across. You know, and part of Ramadan as well, you know, it's good to be charitable. You know, those acts of being charitable and being nice to people, you know, those are heavily emphasized during Ramadan. And just, you know, going to the mosque and just, you know, just being around people that remind you of God as well. So yeah, no, it's something that I really, really like, look forward to. And it's such an exciting time for me and other Muslims around the world.
And how has the club supported you? Because presumably they really want to make sure that you stay fit and healthy. They want you to be performing at your best as well. Do they
Yeah.
do anything differently to help you throughout this period?
I think with the timings and the schedules, with food, they always make sure that there's like, whatever the food may be, that there's a box of something that is just for me. So like, I can always, you know, put all that food or energy back into me. Or, for example, what I do really love is that they always make space for me to pray. I think that's the most important thing for me. Food and stuff like that, I can always take care of, but, to be inclusive and show that, you know, my faith is accepted here. It's all right for me to pray. It's all right for me to be who I am. I think that's the biggest way that they support me. And yeah, I'm really appreciative of them.
Kent Online Sports.
Football, and it was a dramatic last-minute win for Gillingham at the weekend. They beat Barrow 1-0 away from home, pretty much from the last kick of the match in the 103rd minute. Manager Gareth Ainsworth spoke to the club's media team following the final whistle.
You're away at Barrow, right? This pitch looks okay from the cameras, probably. It's bobbly as hell. It's horrible. We made Barrow look really poor today. People say that Barrow are poor side. We made them look poor. You've got to give some credit to my boys because they made Barrow look very average today. We had the majority of the chances. We hit the post. We should have scored from a corner. What a way to win the game. What a way to win the game. I am so proud of my boys, you know. From last week's feeling after the game, it's sort of totally different in there now because we knew we were a better team today. We knew that we had the territory, we had that. And I know that sometimes, you know, we lack a bit of quality around the box, but it's coming, we're working on it. And really pleased. Subs made an impact. It's been a costly day because I've lost a couple through injury. I've had to take off, you know. But you like Eleni Sereno back, you know, and Aaron Rowe coming back into it. Cameron making his start. Seb Pomol, I thought, had a great game, you know, chasing and running. And you know, Sam Gale and Andy Smith coming back into the team, I thought were solid next to Omar. So, yeah, really, really pleased with how we've won the game. 15 seconds to go is not a bad way, a bad time to score the first goal of the game. But listen, we are going to put it on teams. I like that. That's my style of football. So I know the fans can get a little bit, I like being difficult to beat and putting it on teams. And that's how we'll play. And I loved it today. It was a great win. And really pleased for the boys. They have needed that. And not just them. 237 away fans, please go back to Priestfield on Saturday and spread that joy, because you lot were brilliant at the end. Some of the emotions that we're feeling, you know, in front of you guys is crazy, especially after, you know, the boos of last weekend, and rightly so. I've said, you know, people pay the money, they come in and everyone's an expert and everyone wants to do what they want to do, but we come away with 3 points, and it's a big 3 points, because I think there's a few people looking over our shoulder rather than looking above, and I don't want that to happen. I want to make sure that we are ploughing forward, getting this plan right, and it was nice to see a lot of the boys coming back from injury, coming out, picked a couple up. We'll have to judge that, but next week I want this momentum to go again.
The result means the Jewels have played 33, won 11, drawn 11, lost 11, with 41 goals for and 41 goals against so far this season. And they're still 16th in the League Two table. Elsewhere, Punjab United will find out later who they'll face in the semi-finals of the FA Vars. They made it through after beating Downton FC 1-0 on Saturday. The Gravesend-based team are now just one win away from playing at Wembley. And finally, in ice hockey, Kent's Invicta Dynamo had mixed results from games on the road over the weekend. They lost 3-2 to Swindon Wildcats on Saturday night, but beat Cardiff Fire 5-2 yesterday evening. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. Plus, you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories.
News you can trust. This is the Kent Online Podcast.